Let me declare the meeting open. My name is Dikeledi Sotesi. I'm a member of this committee, Economic Development. Can we start by introducing ourselves and the offices we are representing in this meeting? Some of us already know one another, but for the benefit of those who are not familiar with their faces, maybe we know the names, so to associate the faces with the names.
Madam Chair, my name is Pierre Robbie. I represent the Democratic
Alliance. My name is Phumzile Pengu. I'm also representing the ANC.
Michael Hamlin, INET Bridge.
As Jeffrey Quina, I'm with the Industrial Development Corporation of South Africa.
Shatil Mir, Industrial Development Corporation.
Good morning, my name is Nela Sowazi. I'm with the IDC.
Are we done with introduction? Okay. Do you have any apologies?
Yes, Chair. We've received four apologies, Chair, from Honorable Singh and Honorable Lyon, both on sick leave. Honorable Holomisa and Honorable Mabaso will also not be able to attend the meeting, Chair.
Those are our apologies. I have here notes from the chairperson. I'll ask our sincere to go through them, to give the background of what you've already dealt with so that we can move on the same path and have a common understanding. Shall we?
Chair, a significant part of the national response to the global economic slowdown should be to rebuild local industrial capacity and avoid deindustrialization during the period ahead. Critical to such a strategy is the need to improve the competitiveness and performance of key local industries, particularly vulnerable sectors and of small businesses. Vulnerable sectors are those sectors with significant employment and labor intensity and where there are currently large plant or actual job losses and company closures as a result of the crisis. Vulnerable sectors include clothing, textiles and footwear, mining and the auto and capital equipment sectors. Members will recall that in our last meeting on Friday, 28 August 2009, the committee resolved that we will conduct oversight over the stakeholders responsible for implementing the framework agreement. For this reason, the meeting has been called for today for the IDC. Members will also recall that the framework agreement states in paragraph 3.5a that the, and I quote, IDC will increase the level of its equity exposure in the stressed sectors where possible and will make increased working capital available to firms in large labor-intensive sectors. The IDC is a self-financing national development finance institution. It was established to promote economic growth and industrial development in South Africa. Their mandate includes the rest of the African continent, and they are active throughout the entire region. They operate in a broad spectrum of industries, and with a specialized knowledge and experience, are able to offer valid and appropriate financial assistance to a wide variety of individuals and companies. The Minister of Economic Development, Honorable E. Patel, noted in our briefing with him on Friday, 28 August 2009, the following regarding the IDC. One, the IDC has paid 6 billion rand over the 2 years available to companies in distress due to the recession. Two, 49 funding applications are in the pipeline, and since 1 April 2009, 11 financing applications totaling 743 million has been approved. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Aripo. That is our background. From the information, one knows how important it is for the committees that are dealing with economic transformation to work together because we have the same objective. And maybe in our presentation, we'll see the similarities in terms of the objective of this committee and the IDC. Let us then start. And before we start, I just forgotten something that the chairperson said, even the whip of the committee is attending another meeting. Maybe you'll join us later as well, depending on the, you know, deliberations of the particular meeting. Let us then hand over to the presenters to do their part. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, for affording us an opportunity to come and engage with the committee. I know we've done the introductions, but I think it would be proper if I indicate my two colleagues which part of the IDC business are they from. Neo Sowazi is in charge of corporate affairs and marketing. She's an executive. And Shakil Mir is an executive in charge of industrial sectors. He is also part of the IDC representation in the task teams, because there's two streams in which we participate. One is on distressed companies, and the other one is on the financing side, and we also have a representation there by the name of Ufikile Khumalo, who is our executive. What we've done with this presentation, Chair, we've tried to tailor-make it just for the request, but I do realize that it's the first time we have at least an interaction with this particular committee, so I will say one or two things which are not necessarily in the slides. Just to give some background, we've also, I just checked with Saroj that our annual report was tabled in Parliament, so I would imagine at some point the members would have a sight of that, which gives an indication of what we've done over the past financial year, which ended on the 31st of March 2009, because our year end in line with government starts on the 1st of April. But it also provides a 5-year statistical review of the activities that we've done as IDC. We hold it owned by government, I think, as the members know. We have a board of directors, which is presently chaired by Ms. Wendy Luhabe. All the board members, bar only one, are independent individuals, although appointed or recommended by the minister to Parliament. Only one member of the board member is a DTI employee. We've been established since 1940. I'm sure the members know. We participate in a number of sectors. I will highlight some of those sectors that we have in the presentation. Since 2000, IDC's mandate was extended to cover the rest of the African continent. That is, we can invest in the rest of the African continent. I think in the background that was just mentioned. So if you look at the IDC's portfolio, which is not going to be evident in the presentation that I'm going to make, is that about value, if you look at the value, including the commitments that we've made, about 15% of our investments, at least end commitments, are into the rest of the African continent. Still largely in the SADC region, but we also are involved in a number of other countries, like we have a project in Nigeria, we have a project in Ghana, so in various degrees, and they are all in different stages. Largely, the projects outside of South Africa are either in the tourism, the telecoms, or the mining sector. That's largely where you'd find our activity. But we operate even outside of South Africa on the sectors that we also invest in South Africa, which I will highlight. I thought I'd just highlight that part, which is not going to be obvious in the presentation that I'm making. In terms of our vision, which we still believe is still relevant, even now, even when in the distressed situation that we find ourselves, is that we see IDC that's striving to be the primary driving force of sustainable development and innovation, not only for the benefit of South Africa, but for the rest of the African continent. And our mission, we also think it's still very relevant, with our key objectives of supporting industrial capacity development and promoting entrepreneurship. I mean, we do that in a number of ways, which I will talk to. And from our activities and our objectives that we set ourselves, these are some of the key desired outcomes that we would like to see from our activities. The first one being sustainable employment, be it in terms of creating new jobs through our activities, or in particularly in this environment that we find ourselves in saving jobs, either in the existing companies that we have or some of the companies that will approach the IDC. We also hope through our activities, or at least aim, that there is a growing sectorial diversity where we look at those growth sectors where they have an ability to create more jobs, either directly or indirectly. From time to time, we do sector analysis to understand where the growth areas are, where South Africa will be best placed in terms of its competitiveness. And then from there, that informs how we really help or try and promote in the development of those sectors. We look at regional equity because we, particularly in South Africa, we know at this stage the three provinces, there's really three provinces that benefit largely, or at least disproportionate to the others. And one of our outcomes, I think, through our activities is to try and promote having other projects and or activities in the other provinces. For an example, in Northern Cape, in Mpumalanga, in Limpopo. So there's a concerted effort to try and bring that balance. We also hope in the process that our outcomes would result in medium-sized enterprises growing. That sector, we do that in some cases in collaboration with other development finance institutions, because there are those that are predominantly for SME, Kula for an example, and NEF to a greater or lesser degree. We also hoping through our activities that new entrepreneurs will be able to enter the economy. I mean, we from time to time have the specific schemes that we would introduce. For an example, we had early last year we put in a 1 billion rand fund, which we call Transformation and Entrepreneurial Scheme, where 40% of that was earmarked for companies that are owned and or controlled by women, so that we can help try and bring in new entrepreneurs. But also there's about 10% of that for people who would find it difficult from time to time in terms of having the contribution which we've made available. But also we've also earmarked some about 50 million of that for people with disabilities, and we've also looked at the communities and the workers. So we're hoping through that we try and encourage new entrepreneurs to come into the economy.
Just a pause. The chairperson has just arrived, Ms. Coleman. You know, you see, we share the wealth of this country. We not only share the wealth, but the power as well. So I'm sharing my power with her, but I'll give over to her. I think you continue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I don't know why Mr. Diz is doing that, but we may continue.
All right, thank you, Chair. What we see as one of the key failures is access to funding. I think it's also very evident, particularly in this time, you know, where there's companies have experienced a lot of distress. But what we try and do is to ensure that in our assessment that the sustainability, at least the future financial sustainability, is something that we comfortable with in, during our assessment. In our processes, in our interventions, we also try to ensure that we help bring in competition, but we assist those companies or projects which will bring in competition. But what we find is our real key, one of our key roles, is on project development. Because you'd find is that we play a big role, at least in our minds, in terms of greenfield projects, in terms of early startups, and also in venture capital as well, because we know in South Africa, I think particularly in venture capital, not as much investment is directed towards that. But we find through our own activities, we find that we tend to be one of the leading private equity financiers. You see, we have a number of investments where we hold equity in varying degrees, up until 49% in some cases. We have a couple of those that we control, but it's not our main aim to control any companies, but it sometimes happens from time to time. But over time, we reduce our stake there. Our involvement in the economic activity covers all sectors and includes those that have been highlighted as priority sectors, not only because of the distress, but in line with the National Industrial Policy Framework and the Action Plan. So you'd find that we do participate in that. I mean, the next two slides, which I'm going to go through, will give the committee a sense of where our investment is and our activities are. Because as I indicated earlier, we're involved in a number of sectors in South Africa, the food, beverage, and agro industries. There, our portfolio, these numbers would be as at the end of 30th of June, the top line. And the second line will be the value of the approvals that we did for the financial year ending 31st March, and the jobs number would have been those numbers that we, through our investments that we made during that financial period, that we expecting a corresponding number of jobs would be created from those investments. In some cases, there's a lag because the project gets implemented over more than 1 year, but in some cases, those jobs are happening in that particular year. So in food, beverage, and agro industries, our portfolio size at market value, because some of the investments that we have, I want to hasten to clarify that, some of them would be listed, so we have to market them because we comply with the Companies Act and it calls from time to time that we mark to market. So you'd find that the values would move, particularly the listed ones, from one period to the other. But on food beverage, our portfolio size is about 3.3 billion. In the mining and beneficiation, naturally, that's the big one. Also, with some historical investments, which we still have some shareholding, is just under 20 billion. With the approvals in that particular year of 2.2, and jobs expected from those approvals of 3,000. Forestry, wood, and paper is 2.7 billion. Clothing, textiles, leather, and footwear, I think it's been one of the sectors that's been mentioned as well, 1.2 billion. So I think it's still, at least to us, demonstrate that we are still involved in that particular sector in spite of the challenges that we find. But I mean, we will talk about what we're doing as interventions. Chemicals and allied, 7.2. Metals and transport equipment, 1.8. So that will also include the automotive sector in that one. Construction site, the construction, this is one of the youngest business units, or at least sectors that we invested in. In fact, we started concentrating on construction when South Africa got the rights to host 2010. And then also on the private-public partnerships, which is 5.7, this is where we also see that will be a growth area, but I mean beyond just maybe the short-term challenges that we're facing in terms of investments. And if we look at our pipeline and the allocation of capital that we're earmarking, I think that's one of the growth on. Transport is 2.8, tourism is 3.3, franchising, which is where you'd largely find the small and medium-sized enterprises, 1 billion. Media motion, it's a billion. It's also one of the relatively younger sectors that we've focused on in Techno 1.8. And then on venture capital, 700 million. Where in this particular one, we our approach is a two-pronged approach. The first one is where we've invested funds with about five or six funds in conjunction with other people, where they administer them on behalf of IDC and other fund managers. But there's about 250 million which we invest directly into venture capital ourselves as IDC. So it's a two-pronged approach. And then we also invest in healthcare and education, which the bulk of that 3.1 billion really is on the healthcare side. So this is giving a sense of where our activities, our investments are in those different sectors, with the different periods in which we have invested in. As I would like to believe that the committee will see that we have tried to participate in a number of sectors. And in these sectors, those investments are different stages. You'd find that there's a number which is an early stage, particularly if you look at the mining side. On the mining side, there's a number on pre-feasibility and feasibility stage, which we would do, where we, if you look on the food, beverage, and agro industries as well, where we, there's a number also at very early stages where the risk is relatively high. Now, if we move to what is our role in trying to counteract the crisis that we see, from where we stand, we see that the firms really are impacted on different levels. The firms, I'm using the firms being the either our existing clients or some of the clients that come to us and approach us. That the impact is they feel it from some of the traditional financial institutions tightening their credit lines, extending less credit or restricting or having a bit more restrictions than ordinarily that they would have. But we also see from the firm side that there has been some reduction in some of the consumer spending, and where consumers have spent a bit less, so then the market is a bit low. But we've also seen that some of the businesses, because of the confidence, then they would cut some of their costs and they would invest less. But also in some cases, particularly those ones that export as well, there's very low levels of foreign demand, and hence the exports, we find that they've dried up. We've seen that also not only in the automotive side, but we've seen it in the mining side in particular. But also now we've also seen that the other part that they find is squeezing is either their creditors start experiencing some pressures, and as a result of that, then the terms, or at least the repayment terms that the creditors would have ordinarily extended, they tend to shorten those, and then that puts in a bit pressure on the cash flow. But also what we find is on the debtor side, that because the demand is reducing a bit, so the sales are not there, and hence there might be some excess stock build-up, which then also puts in some pressure in the financing on the cash flow side. So what we've done as IDC, we're saying there's a gap that needs to be filled, and we've said we're not going to reduce our involvement, in spite of the fact that we ourselves have found that some of our investments that we've made, particularly those that have been listed, their values have shrunk a bit, so our capabilities have been reduced to some extent. But we said in spite of that, we've budgeted that for this financial year that we are in, what started on the 1st of April, we will budgeting to approve at least 11.4 billion of funding, of which in that there's the 2.9 which has been specifically earmarked for companies in distress. This is part of the 6.1 that I think the minister spoke about, because we said over 2 years we are looking at earmarking about 6.1 billion. Obviously, we are constantly looking at that figure, looking at the demand, which I will talk through the demand, which is what we see. But as we speak in terms of our plans, this is what we're putting onto the table, because we're saying whilst we assist the companies that are in distress, I think it is important to also look beyond that when there's a recovery, so that we start to invest, particularly in the long-term projects, which would need some lead time so that we can assist. What we see from our side is that there's higher levels of restructuring from either our existing clients, that's the demand that we see from our side, is or from of the new clients, because we also have our own investments, which I've highlighted in the other slides when I was showing the sectors, because some of those companies that we have are also experiencing difficulties, and they've approached us to either restructure the loans or inject some more working capital, which I will expand a little bit on what we do. But we also find that some of the companies which ordinarily would have gone to the banks, because of the tightening of the credit and the reduction of the liquidity, they now tend to come to the IDC. And we've also seen that the IDC is expected now to take a bit more equity than maybe in some cases where debt would have been required. I think that point was also made in the minister's statement, I think in the background that was given. And as a result of that, we also see that there's an expectation that as IDC we need to increase our levels of funding as far as the infrastructure is concerned, which is one of the reasons why we've upped our at least budgeted commitments going forward. Some of the constraints which I think I highlighted a little bit on what we see for us to be able to respond to that is that we've seen naturally the volume of applications coming up, because people now come to IDC when in previously would have gone to the bank. But we also, because we how we fund ourselves, one part is also to go into the markets and borrow some funds. So the cost of funding has gone up. I'm not sure whether the committee members have seen even in today's paper, Moody's has downgraded us to A3, because IDC together with DBSA have always been two notches above government. But when Moody's equalized the domestic and the long-term grading, that resulted in government going to A3, which is one part an upgrade, on the other part a downgrade, but then IDC and DBSA being on that line. So naturally that also comes with a higher cost of funding. But because of the relationships we have, we are still able, in spite of that, to get relatively, I would underline that, relatively cheaper funding. But it's not as cheap as we would have got it in the economic crisis. But also from our investments, as I said, some of our own investments have experienced some challenges. We've seen a decrease in the income.
Just a minute.
I don't know what point
of... No, I wanted to say, on a point of whatever, I just wanted to check on the Moody's. If you moved a little bit fast for my comprehension, if you can just come back to the grading.
I think that was just part of information. Not is it part of the presentation? It is critical, I understand. That's what I wanted to.
Thanks, Chair. The reason I raised that is to maybe amplify the point of the higher cost of funding from traditional. That's maybe if I can step back. Well, I think it's in business day to day, but we. It's not a new article, because it was coming when Moody's was equalizing, because government and the domestic part at a higher rate than in the international foreign borrowing. So when Moody's was equalizing that, because I think government was on A2 on the foreign, and then on Baa1 A2 on the domestic and Baa1 on the foreign. So when they're equalizing, because it was an anomaly for government to have two ratings really from the same rating agency, but IDC was A2. So but then government was increased on international front to A3 because it was Baa1. But then on IDC together with DBSA, then we're downgraded to be in line with government. So we're in line with government now, as opposed to have been higher on the international front. So, but that has an impact of reducing, of making the cost of funding a little bit higher than you would have. So that was the point really I was trying to make. But we've also seen, maybe coming back to the last block, that the level of impairments, because some of our companies are in distress, has been higher than in the previous years. How we differentiate ourselves with traditional financiers, we see ourselves as taking a long-term view as opposed to some of the financial institutions traditional, which are short-term. We find that our credit criterion, which is willing to look at companies that are in distress, new companies, we have a commodity credit criterion, whereas we've seen in the banks the credit criterion is a bit tighter. We're assisting new companies in distress, and we're honoring our investment budget, but we've seen in the traditional financiers there's less credit that's been granted. Although I note that in the last week at least one bank has said they're starting to open up, particularly on the home loans. In terms of the impact, we've seen a high level of expectation, increase the pipeline, but we've seen that we need to be more careful in assessing the businesses, particularly in this environment, but at the same time we have to be quick in our response. At this stage, try and project forward. I mean, in the previous year, we made an operating income of 3.9 billion. We're seeing that coming down to at least 10% in the following year. But I think when the year progresses, we'll have a fair sense. But we are expecting that we will be seeing a drop in our operating income because of the increased impairments, reduced dividends, reduced interest income as well. But what we're doing, we're continuing to negotiate with the banks and the creditors on behalf of our clients, not for us, really, to try and cooperate with them so that we can come up with solutions that are sustainable for the clients that we, either our existing ones or our new ones. We see ourselves, IDC, like all other development finance institutions, playing a counter-cyclical role, where in the distressed times, we don't cut back, but we invest more. Where we look at long-term, and then that means then we have to look at post the crisis, and hence we look at the greenfield and the expansions that need to be supported, because otherwise if we stop, then there's a danger that when we recover, we might still have to, we might have fallen back in terms of trying to ensure that the environment is conducive. We're engaging with industry players. I think this is one time where we're engaging even more together with the banks, because what we find is some of the investments we have, banks are involved in some cases. The new clients that come to us, banks are the major creditors, so we're engaging with them to try and find good solutions. But also internally what we're doing is we're redeploying out people to areas where there's a higher level of demand so that we can ensure that our response time is much quicker, so that the solutions we come up with are the solutions that will be in the interest of the clients that we see. And that means then our level of investment naturally then does indeed increase. In the criterion that we have designed ourselves to see how, when we look at these companies in distress, what criterion do we use? We know some of the reasons that the businesses face is because of lack of sales, either input costs are high, or some of the debtors are not paying because of the crisis, either late or not paying at all, or there's lack of access of credit, as I indicated, or some of the shareholders would ordinarily would have injected capital are unable to do that. So we know that these are some of the problems that these companies are facing, as I highlighted. And but now what we know that from that, businesses have started experiencing cash flows, and including their profitability declining since March 2008, because that's when I think we saw the real impact coming in. What we do is then we look at saying businesses that we would then support in terms of the criterion is to say, at some point in time, they should have demonstrated sustainability. We're using a two-year pre-crisis as an indication to us to say, has this business been showing some sustainability? And the real reason it finds itself in this is because of the crisis. I think that's to us a good indication. But also we are sensitive to the fact that some of the companies might be of strategic nature, be it in terms of either employment or in terms of the capacity that they have or in terms of the location that we have. So those are some of the things that we would consider where the profitability is not maybe to the levels that we would expect in other companies. So that's also an indication to us. But when we assess the building, the business rather, so that we can get a sense of whether that should be supported going forward, is to say, is there a plan for a clear turnaround? I think because we in line with our mandate and our act, we would want to see that we invest in businesses that are sustainable into the future. So if medium to long term we don't see a clear plan for a turnaround, then in our minds, then we don't get comfortable, and then hence in some cases we don't support that business, because then we just saying we will be throwing good money after bad. So it's important that there needs to be, in terms of the plans going forward, that's a clear turnaround in the medium to long term for that particular business that we're going to be funding. But what we also, because we know it's not only the cash that we invest in that particular business that solves the problem or helps mitigate the issue. So there's other considerations that we look at. So we look at areas of how to assist the business. I mean, we call it business enhancement. It could either be bringing in some experts in a particular field, be it in the technical or the management side, if we think that will assist the business to be able to respond in addition to or instead of the cash that we might be bringing in. But also we find that during this time, it also provides a good opportunity to look at consolidation or rationalization, because in some cases you'd find that there might be a lot of players and the markets might be overcrowded. And then we'd look at it. But we're cautious that in that process, competition does not get killed. So we do that very cautiously. And because companies are in distress, then we would, through our unit, we have a unit which we call Post-Investment Management Department that monitors closely those companies. So we tend to be very close so that we know that what has been set up as a plan is being implemented, and if there's any signs that we need to intervene a little bit more than we have, then we would be able to do that. But what we know that what is important is that we need to get buy-in from all the stakeholders in the company, be it the shareholders, be it management, be it other funders, creditors, or employees, because it cannot be an IDC only initiative. If all of those stakeholders don't come to the party, I think whatever solution we try and bring, I don't think it will be sustainable. In terms of the instruments that we look at for these companies that are in distress, we would it will depend really on the specific needs of the company. That is why we don't have industry blanket bailouts, but we have company specific. That's why we spend time in understanding what the company needs so that we can provide a proper solution. So in some cases we find that there's only a short-term funding need, in some cases a medium-term, whether it be a working capital facility which is financing the stock debtors or creditors, or if it's a long-term one, then it would be a term loan. In some cases, what we find is in some businesses just need guarantees, and hence we provide a guarantee instrument. In some cases, it's either a suspensive sale facility or a loan facility. So it really depends. But in some cases, we find that there is equity that is needed. It can either be new equity. It could either be for our existing clients. We could convert some of the debt that we have into equity. And in some cases, then we would defer our capital, or in some cases we would give moratoriums, and in some cases even capitalize the interest. When we capitalize interest, at least then the cash flow implication is at least minimized for now until into the future. When we advance funds to these companies that are in distress, I think it is important that those funds stay in the business. I think that's our key objective, so that they can help improve the situation in the business. It is not our intention to bail out any shareholders or banks, and we would want the money to be used into sustaining the business. It is not used for normal expansion that we have under the normal IDC funding, where people want to, as I said, I mean, for this year we said 11.4, 2.9 is for distress, and then the balance could be used for normal IDC funding. We prefer not to use this for exiting shareholders, and hence I'm saying the money should stay in the business, and we don't want to refinance facilities. We'd rather want to see that money stay in the business. This slide was really trying to show really this increase in demand of the IDC funding. So, we've seen over time since July, I mean, there's been really increase. There's been some spikes because of the distress. Okay. And then the next two slides will show some steps in terms of where we've received the applications. Broadly speaking, in terms of our business units or our sectors, we've divided ourselves into three. There's one, the industrial sectors, which is the red one, which Shakil is an executive in charge of that. We've got the services sectors, which is headed by Katinka Schumann, and then the resources sector, which is headed by Ufikile. So in the resources, which would be food, beverage, mining, PPP, and venture capital, and then the industrial, chemicals, textiles, in line with those two slides which I showed our investments in. So we've seen applications in these different sectors. That gives really an indication. And we've seen, also it's giving a sense of the increase, where the increase comes from. We've seen some of them in the services sector in terms of the applications that we've received. In terms of what we've approved, I think these figures were shared with the committee by the minister, Minister Patel. But 485 from 14 distressed companies, that's for the year ending 31st March 2009. And then from April 2009 to up until August, we've approved almost double that, which is for 738 million, which includes one approval outside of South Africa. And we're hoping with those approvals in this current financial year from April to August, we will be able to, we're expecting to save about 3,000 jobs. And the next bullet shows the provinces in which those companies come from: KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Western Cape, Northern Cape, and then one which is outside of South Africa, in Mozambique. In terms, those are new ones that have come in. We have 16 of our existing clients which we have restructured their funding, either in terms of moratoriums, either in terms of capitalization of interest, either in terms of converting some of our investments into our loans into equity. And in that period as well, we have rejected 8 funding applications to the tune of 263. There's one major one there in the textiles. I'm sure the committee knows about it, which we've rejected. The largest portion is value-wise, that in the long term, there was no clear sign of sustainability. The others, really, it was because the plans were not there, information was not there. But those ones were very small ones, and there was one or two which were really outside of IDC's mandate. I think it was one, not two. So in terms of the split, really, which is that chart right on the left-hand corner, 42% in terms of funds has been to new clients, and then 58 into the existing ones. As I said, because we want the money to stay in the business, some of the conditions that we've put in is to say we would restrict when we help us companies in distress, payment of dividends, repayment of shareholders' loans, and then we would look at restricting or minimizing job losses, because what we find is when we help restructure these companies, we want to ensure that we save jobs, so we would minimize job loss. In some cases, it might happen that we have some jobs that are being lost, but we minimize that, because that's what we try and do with our funding coming into this. But we do this on a case-by-case basis, because each company would have its own requirements, but these are some of the restrictions that we would attach to these companies that are in distress that come to the IDC. In terms of what we see, this is in our pipeline. This is what we have, about 2.4 billion, which is in our pipeline, of which about 34 applications, that amounts to about 34 applications, so the 25 is in the basic assessment, 9 in the due diligence stage. The basic assessment is the initial stage, and the due diligence stage is when we invest. The bulk of that comes from the automotive sector, particularly on the component side. And then I would say second is in the mining side. So, but that gives you a sense of where we see in terms of what we have seen as companies that are in distress in terms of the pipeline. In conclusion, Chair, we will, as IDC, continue to review the demand and make sure that the funding that we've allocated is adequate and is necessary. Without jeopardizing the sustainability of IDC going forward. But I think we are able to try and manage that, because we continually also try and look at finding cheaper sources of funds so that we can really pass those benefits forward. We know that our human resource capacity is under strain, but we're managing that. We use very skilled people from time to time so that we can address these short-term requirements as speedily as possible. And we're saying, in spite of us having been operating in this economic crisis, we do look beyond that, because we have to ensure that we continue to invest long-term, but also help ensure that when South Africa comes out of this, we are able to respond to this. Thank you, Chair. We'll pause there.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Members, I think we had the presentation. Can we interact with it? Of course, we want to see how best is the ICC prepared to handle this crisis, and it's important that we get the answers today. Whether we are satisfied with what we have just received, or are there still many other issues that you feel could be done, things that you feel they could be done to assist the situation. Mr. Ngonyama, and Rabi, and then Mr. Desi.
Madam
Mr. Huang. Madam, you had a name? Okay, in that order, please.
Well, Madam Chair, I must start by appreciating the presentation and by IDC, and perhaps also to say that definitely it is of great assistance in terms of empowering us to be able to understand what we're faced with and the various instruments that are necessary to change the situation. I want to firstly maybe say, in terms of the spread throughout the country, we need to understand, because we represent various communities, where is this focusing and concentrated? Again, is it focusing on areas like Gauteng and Western Cape, leaving out the and maybe generally rural areas or provinces? And what is the strategy? And maybe we need to also to be taken into consideration on the, or rather to be taken in confidence on, and the spread between the enterprise levels, between the small and medium enterprise and the big industries. And where is the scale? The other one is the logistics. Does it fall under services? The construction, what is the criteria for approval on those? And matters relating to the turnaround and the time frames for approval and the of these. I think I'm covered, because the other question was the one in page, it has been answered in page 12 on the criteria for companies in distress.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Ngonyama. I think also the area covered on page 18, I think if you can look at those companies, the provinces, I guess they're responding to the question. Page 18, yeah. Dr. Rabi?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Quena, for your submission. I think one of the challenges to the South African economy is to retain jobs and reduce the alarming high rate of unemployment. Now, Mr. Quena, you mentioned there that you look at the, especially companies in distress, you look at their long-term viability. And I see a number of these companies or some of these sectors which you refer to is fairly labor intensive. It's very, I'm referring to construction, the textile industry, mining and so forth. But Mr. Quena, a number of, I think, organized labor and the Minister of Labor has come up against the institution of labor broking and so forth. They said it's been abused in the past and they want to rectify. Do you consider, if a company in distress uses extensive labor brokering and so forth, will that play a role in assessing its eligibility for funding and so forth? I'd like to have your views on that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks,
Mr. Paul.
Thank you,
Chair. On page 3, the second bullet about businesses unable to access funding, that is perceived as a high risk. Very often, high risk would be someone who doesn't have a collateral. So I'd like to know how IDC deals with the situation whereby people do not have a sufficient collateral. And also, member, when I alluded to the field of rural development, that one would like to have a breakdown in terms of rural and area, development. And also in terms of race and gender, so that you are able to deal with issues of transformation.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Tetsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. From the page 20 is this table. I see there is a pipeline for the end of August 2009 for this application funding, this company. From the inside, I see the textile and the clothing only for the 20 companies. But the most difficult is the small business from the textile and the clothing. I don't know why only 20 is applied. And also, from the some case, if I know, someone delivered this case from IDC against to the some company no pay the interest. They delivered to my place. Past, I think it's 4 months ago. They sent it to the IDC, sent it to the High Court. I think it is also a textile company. They can't pay the interest. They loaned the money from IDC about 3 million rand. I don't know how IDC deal with this, because it is take two, three times for the go to the High Court case. So this means is they got a guarantee with the IDC or not. Otherwise, I don't know how can they get the loan money from the IDC without any interest in pay the past 1 year. They didn't pay any money to the IDC. How IDC deal with this? Thank you.
I was trying to follow the last question. I didn't follow. And I hope the CEO did get the question clearly. Mr. Ngonyama, you want to follow up quickly?
Yes, just the last one. On your sectoral involvement slide in page 5, tourism, lower approval, especially that were leading to 2010. Because one would imagine that this is one of the critical areas. Service industry right now is a very, very important industry in South Africa. But it's very low. If you look at the portfolio of 3.3 versus 710, and we look at the franchising, which is supposed to be a soft area, in my own view, again, low approval there. And I'm just raising that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ngonyama. I don't know whether you are in a position to respond before we continue with further questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I will ask some assistance from my colleagues here. So, if with your permission, Chair, on some of the questions, we'll try and do justice, Chair. If we don't, maybe when there's a second round, maybe they can be looked at. I think the first question was the spread between the region, some of the Bay, and then also the spread in terms of SME and big industries, so that we can understand the strategy, the concentration strategy. In terms of our investments, let me start with our investments generally. Value-wise, it's skewed towards big business. But numbers-wise, it's to SME. Naturally, because the SMEs have got lower values, that's one. What we can do, we can provide for the investments. I don't think we've heard it in the slides. What we can provide is the details in terms of where we are. I think we can provide the committee with that. But value-wise, about 15%, 20% of our investments, like NEWA would help me, would be in SMEs. But for the companies that are in distress, Shakir will talk about the split there, because most of these would find in his unit, but we'll come back to that. And then in terms of the logistics, we have seen some, in fact, we have, as we speak now, looking at some of the companies that are in distress that are in the logistics sector. So we would look at those as well. That's why in the transport SBU, we have some of those in the logistics. We're looking at those because some of them are indeed employers of a number of people. So we're looking into that. They are indeed in the services sector. together with tourism, ICT, construction and that. Why a low level of approval on the tourism and the franchising? On the tourism, is because some of the investments have been made in the past because of the lead time and some of these. So some of them, because the approvals that we've shown in the slides are only for that particular year. But if you see the total investment, I think it's the size of the portfolio we have in the tourism side, which is about 3.3 billion, it shows that we've made some investments going forward. So what you'd find is for the big hotel groups and all of those investments were already started. There are some new ones that have come up in this particular year which we're doing, which are also earmarked for 2010. I think there's about, as I speak, I'm subject to correction, we're looking at about four hotels that who are already in preparation for 2010 in different provinces to cater for that. The franchising, SMEs are the first ones to feel the pinch a bit harder than the big corporates, because the big corporates have got cushion. And what we've seen on the franchising is that there's been a cutback on the applications themselves coming up, because we have, if you look at the portfolio that we have on terms of companies that have suffered mostly, franchising is one of them. Although there's an element of specific brands that don't necessarily make it. Other brands are very strong, they can buy this, but others have found that they feel the impact a lot. So, and hence there's a little bit of a reduction on the franchising. We know it's an easier one, it should be a soft one, and which is one of the reasons why we, yeah, because our main target on the franchising is to say, in terms of our policies, that at least 70% of the funds that we advance into franchising should be for the previously disadvantaged, because this is an easier way to bring in, particularly new first-time entrepreneurs. But at the same time, also they felt the pain. I mean, it's not that because we're pulling back, but I think we're spending a bit more time understanding some of the brands, because there are some brands where we've really, really, I mean, suffered in terms of the investments. But you have to pick up your brands well to ensure that they're sustained going forward. Let me pause. Shakir, will you just address the, and then I'll come back to the other. Let's just address the split on the split between the SME and the big ones.
You, Chair, in terms of SMEs, we do around 70% of the transactions are to SMEs. But as the CEO mentioned, by value, obviously, because they are smaller transactions, it comes to just around 10% of the total value of investment in any particular year. There was a question relating to rural areas, or two questions relating to urban versus rural development and different provinces. We do make a conscious effort to try and spread our investments. The reality at the same time is that most of the industrial activity is in Gauteng, Cape Town in fact, and Durban, not even the whole of that province. But because we take a conscious view in trying to spread the investments, about 14% of our investments by value are in rural areas or in townships, the historical black townships, and because those tend to be the high impact investments that we do, we probably create about a third of the total jobs in rural areas and in the previous townships. There was a question relating to race and gender. We have, one of our objectives is to look at equitable distribution of our investments. So we do target, in terms of race, that we try and build new black entrepreneurs, and we try to support these entrepreneurs to grow their businesses. So we support expansions by these businesses as well as acquisitions. And in terms of the acquisitions, because we want to create value in the economy, we focus on expansionary acquisitions. I don't have the exact percentages with me at the moment that can be provided.
Thanks, Shakir. Chair, on the issue of collateral, we spend time understanding the project. so that we are not like the other institutions, traditional financial institutions that just look only at collateral. So where there is no collateral, when we look at the project and we're comfortable with funding, but obviously where there is collateral, we would take collateral because we also want to see commitment from the entrepreneur. I think it is important. And hence what you find is we also ask for a contribution, but I mean, contribution is relative to each entrepreneur, but also if you structure a business and you get it to an extent that all it does is services, that it might not be sustainable going forward. But that's why we spend time understanding what drives the business so that you can see what particular interest, what particular instrument you put in to be able to satisfy that. So it's not like if you don't have collateral, you won't be able to be funded by the IDC. We look at what works, whether the person can provide collateral. Because we want to see, because as we know in business, sometimes things do go wrong. So we want, when IDC spends sleepless nights, that the entrepreneur as well is also spending sleepless nights so that we all try and make sure that this thing works. So I think that's the commitment really that we want from the entrepreneurs themselves. Which is why I said when I presented that we have a fund which we put in about R1 billion, of which 40% was for earmarked for companies owned and controlled by women, and then I said 10% of that is earmarked for cases where there are very good projects that are very unique in their nature, but where people cannot even have a contribution. So what we would do is we take from that fund to be able to assist those people, because there are some cases where we would find there's a brilliant idea, there's something that can really revolutionize something, but people do not have the contribution. So we'd earmark that. That's one of the things that we've done. There's a question on the labor brokerage. When we look, the short answer is we don't have that as a conditionality. I think it's something that we can think about. But what we try and do, at least when we assess those jobs, that those jobs are sustainable going forward. So we have not said whether those are provided by the company itself or those are provided by a labor broker. So we have not had that. I think it's something we can apply. But we look at those jobs going forward to say, are they going to be sustainable in that particular investment? That's what really, really drives us. And then there's the question on the textiles, to say why is the amount small. I think in terms of our investments, we've said $1.2 billion is invested in the textiles. But I think the extent of the approval is an indication of the difficulty the sector finds itself in. But it's something that we understand, and hence that's why we're still invested to that level. I mean, that this is one of the sectors that has an ability to create more jobs. But it's something that we watch. I mean, to say we're not pulling back on this sector. But long-term sustainability, I think, is important. And whenever we look at any investment in any sector, I think it's something that we always have to continually look at. To say long-term sustainability is something that we have to be comfortable with. In terms of companies, I think there's another question, if I do justice to that. When we restructure the company's facility, in some cases, we capitalize their interest. I think the question is about capitalizing interest. So then the intention is that then we defer, in a way, the payment of interest into the later times when the companies have come out of this crisis that they find themselves. So there will be a plan for the company to repay. Because we also look at the timing of the cash flows, because there is no point in us structuring a facility where we'd expect the company to pay capital or repayment or interest even. When they cannot afford to. So we structure that. That's why you'll find that in some sectors we hold some equity stakes, although they are small, because we want to structure the instrument to be appropriate. I hope I've done justice to that, Mr. Chair. Chair, with your permission, I think Shakil will also maybe amplify a point on the textiles.
So you chair this, the question related to why is there only one application in the pipeline for clothing and textiles. In fact, that application is for a company which is in distress as a result of the economic crisis. We've got a number of other applications in our pipeline as well. But due to the nature of the sector, some of those have been struggling for some time. So so we've classified it as part of our normal funding as opposed to due to the economic crisis. So we do have a longer pipeline than that. And we are assisting companies in that sector. For example, we've launched a scheme where we're trying to encourage companies to invest in improving their competitiveness. And we're providing funds at a highly subsidized rate to try and preserve viable jobs in that sector.
Thank you for the responses, and I hope members are satisfied with the responses. I would, you have before I come in on mine. Okay.
No, Madam Chair, I think it's important for us because IDC is a very, very strategic institution, and within the context of the economic life of South Africa. And therefore, its role with regard to transformation is very critical. I'm referring here to this question of the rural, because I'm coming from the rural area. The song that we've been singing for a long time, there's very, very little that we see that is going to the rural areas. It actually takes us to the next point, which is the transformation process, because if there isn't much and the income that is going there, it means that there's very, very little that is going to the traditionally disadvantaged communities that would be in the rural areas. And maybe, in fact, we may say that there's a lot that is going to the commercial agriculture, and which is in the rural areas as well. And that actually takes me to the next point, which is the question of, as a result of that, that is why we see the collapse of the infrastructure in the urban areas, because there's exodus of people moving from these areas because there are no jobs, there's no promotion of agro-industry in the rural areas. And I'm really appealing to IDC to make a concerted effort, because we'll continue to experience this exodus of people moving. And therefore, my appeal is that if it's possible for IDC to have scouters, and I don't know whether it's the right word, and scouters that go out to look for these industries rather than wait for the application, and to go out and look for these industries, so that, because people in the world, it's going very difficult for them to come up with business plans, so that they're assisted. And that's my special plea. And I'm really also I need to applaud, and on the question of construction, and it looks the approvals are quite high, and they're there, and on food and beverages, and I have a gripe with regard to disbursement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Quinn, you spoke about turnaround plans and so forth and getting turnaround specialists around. Now, Madam Chair, I want to know, I'd like to rephrase my question in a bit. Those particular companies that you manage by means of turnaround plans, I assume many of them are very labor intensive. Are you aware of the fact that some of these companies which you manage, which you have the controlling interest, do you know whether they use labor brokers or not? Are you in a position to tell me? I'd just like to know, because it's important, you know, to see whether there's an equitable labor component in these particular companies. Thank you.
Can I then come in before you respond, the CEO? I just want to find out from IDC, when I look at your mission, your mission statement, you are a self-financing institution. When I look at your primary objective, you put in first Africa as your primary target, the way I see it, according to your mission statement. And then you put in South African economic development, empowerment of its citizens, secondary. I don't know whether I'm right or wrong. You can correct me there. I just wanted to clarify that. And then the second issue that I want, your strategy towards rural development. To me, it's quite important because you had the questions here. And when I look at what you practically are doing and what you intend to, or what you've already responded to in terms of the crisis, it's quite urban bias, except one or two. But then if we also look at the areas that you're focusing on, you may find that they're more in the urban areas more than in the actual rural areas, where I think what Mr. Ngonyama is concerned is all about that of migration from one area to the other is due to that, to lack of development in one area or the other. I just want to know your strategy, because to me it's like you are responding to the market more than responding to your own, you see, which is to me a bit problematic, because we do have our own industrial policy plans within the country that I think as the IDC should be responding to, because that is intended to transform, to deal with issues of transformation. While on that issue of transformation, I'm a bit worried also when looking at what you have already responded to, because in terms of the your approval, when I look at areas where, you know, women mainly are participating a lot, they are thinly, they are actually not that much assisted. And we know, for instance, that in those areas like food, beverages, and agro-industry, that's where women participate mostly. You also go to textiles and clothing, that's where they participate mostly. Well, transport, finance, they are still trying to, but they are not yet much there. And then in tourism, where you list assisting, that's where they also participate, and that's where we have a serious problem in terms of transformation. I thought you'd lose this opportunity to assist in elevating the participation of the previously, especially the previously disadvantaged communities. You're intending to, let me rephrase, what you have saved so far in terms of the jobs. And I'm not sure, when you say you saved 3,000 jobs, do you mean the 700, and you're going to be saving 300 jobs of you, or you have saved already? Is it as a result of the 743 million rents that you've already spent, or is it something that you intending to do up to the end of the financial year? If not, what is your projected spending or saving of jobs, or jobs that you are intending to save in the next 2 years? Because this 6 billion is for the period of 2 years, isn't it? Can you just give us the projections as to, yes, we understand these are the challenges that you are faced with. There's a number of companies that have already applied. This is how much you are processing. This is how many you have. That we understand. But in terms of what is in the plans of the IDC, what is it that you intend to do? That's the picture I want to see. What are your intentions in response to this particular crisis? and looking at all your resources, because you for instance indicated here that you have both financial, you might have financial and also human resource constraints. That are one of two issues that might impede your response. The statement on page 21 around your concluding remarks, I'm not sure whether I do understand it. You're saying continuously reviewing demand for funding and will allocate additional funds if required, as long as IDC's long-term sustainability not materially impacted. What do you mean by that? I just want to understand that. You are also saying your human resource is under strain, capacity is under strain. After telling us all what you've told us, where does this one put us? Should we say you have the capacity to respond adequately or not, because of the statements that you put in your concluding remarks? I think from my side, that would be, the others, I think they are, I'm not sure whether I should ask them, because there's somewhere where I feel, that's why I wanted to know about your strategy. Maybe I shouldn't ask them. But for the benefit of the discussion, the social partners discussions, maybe I should ask this one. You know, when I look at the difference between what you are doing and what the commercial banks are doing, or commercial finance is doing, I have a feeling that there's some kind of running away from the responsibility. There's something that we normally don't follow up on. Every year, every bank will come with a social investment, plan, costed. Do we follow up on such issues? Is it your role or is it the role of the department? I'm not too sure, because I thought if you are playing this important role, you'd also want to do something about that situation, because it puts some strength into the work that you are doing. Instead of comparing what you are doing vis-a-vis of what they are doing, to me it's about making sure that you help the situation, so that at the end of the day you are able to assist those that are not assisted by the bank, through negotiating with the banks and through making it possible for you to do what you're supposed to be doing. That fund, public investment fund, that is termed social responsibility at the end of the day, that the funding, the fund that is meant to assist. In this crisis situation, where is it? Is it still directed at what they intended to do? Because some of them, if you look at their company's plans, you'll find that they have put aside millions and millions of rand for social responsibility or social investment purposes. But at the end of the day, that money, we don't follow it up as to where does it go to. And I think it should form part of the 6 billion rand that the IDC is meant to assist. Have you tried to follow it up? Have you put it into the discussions at NEDLAC level, so that everybody becomes transparent in terms of what they're doing? You may respond.
Thank you, Chair, for those questions, and to the committee members. On the what our strategy is on the rural, because we do indeed have one. I think I will give to Neo, or maybe so that she can give a sense to the committee of what we do. I think probably, as I said at the beginning, that this is the first interaction with the committee. It also gives us a sense of where we should pitch the presentation, because in this case we just narrowed it
to the response. But we take the points, but never we'll talk about what we do rural, because there's a number of things that we do.
Chairman, as my CEO has already said, I think perhaps maybe the challenge here was that we focused ourselves too narrowly to talking about this death and not necessarily dissecting it as deeply as you would have preferred. My apologies for that. But the members may or may not have heard, but we actually have a strategy for rural development. At this point, we're sitting with 23 development agencies, and the bulk of them are actually situated in the rural areas, in what would typically be the least developed of our economic areas. They are in the process of approving 7. I am talking here about development agencies whose primary mandate is to unearth development or economic opportunities in particular rural areas. This now talks to your proactive activity that we do over and above receiving applications from funders. We are sitting with 13, for instance, in the Eastern Cape. We're sitting with 2 in Limpopo, and we have just approved 3 more for the Free State. We have the Northwest Development Agency, Northern Cape Development Agency. The current Northern Cape Development Agency is a baby of the IDC. We started it from scratch. So that then helps us, resource-wise, to actually unearth new projects, because we may not necessarily have the human capacity, sometimes not even the time, to actually go and start a project from scratch. So those 23 plus the newly 7 approved will actually do that. The second thing we have is that you may have heard in the last 18 months, we've actually opened 8 regional offices. Each province now has an IDC office. This is the effort for us to go down and find out what it is that is making it difficult for business people or private individuals, or perhaps at some point or another, even the implementation of our local economic development plans, so that those are then drawn out and packaged so that they are saleable to project promoters and or the IDC for funding. So those are the kind of strategies that we have in place. And basically the reason why we did this, we realized the Golden Triangle, as it is called, Durban, Cape Town, and Johannesburg, could not sustain South Africa in the way that we are now having to manage things. So to that extent, yes, that's our strategy. It's now been in place now for 4 years. The development agencies are working very well. Typical example that I could give, perhaps maybe as you say, Mr. Ngonyama, you come from the Eastern Cape, the Nelson Mandela Bay Development Agency was actually a baby of the IDC. The Wild Coast Development Agency is a baby of the IDC. We have one coming up in Saldanha. We have another one in Limpopo, and that's just to give you an idea of where we are. Talking about jobs, 34% of the jobs that we did in the last financial year actually were in the rural areas. I do not have at this point, and I will send it through perhaps maybe to the offices of the portfolio committee. What we do not have is a split in numbers, but we do have it. It's just unfortunate that we do not actually include it in there, meaning we don't have a gender split by rural. We don't have a sector split by rural in our presentation, but it's something that we can actually put it through, and perhaps in our next engagement we would then present and engage with it. But we definitely do appreciate that we have challenges in our rural areas, and it's not something we're sitting back and lying back on. Thank you.
Thanks, Neil. Chair, maybe on the point which is linked to that on the jobs, if the 3,000, those are the jobs that we... from the investments of the 700 odd million that we have. I think in the further information, because we have put in at least a budget of what we think we can save, but I don't have the figure yet. I don't think none of my colleagues would, but we can put it. Because in terms of the plans, when we said 6 billion, which we set aside, we've had a corresponding figure, but I think you caught me unaware now. I didn't think the committee would ask for the plan, but we can give the figure of it. But that will change depending on the uptake of the 6 billion. So, but there is an intention really to say that we should save jobs as far as that is concerned. On the turnaround, which is also talked to the jobs, on the labour brokers. We can check. I can't tell you now that how many of the clients that we have saved and or investing, how many of those have labor brokers? I can check, we will pass it to the Office of the Secretary so that we give the committee a sense of that. I think what we've really concentrated on to say, the jobs that have been created, are they sustained, or the ones that we say, are they sustained beyond the fact? We can check how much of those labor brokers we can provide. The question on the plan by the banks, in the task team that my executives participate in, I think the point has been raised, because that's a commitment made by the banks. We don't have jurisdiction over that. But what we have is over the clients that we have funded. So in terms of their plans, they have plans, and then we do follow those up in terms of what they want to do, be it either on the transformation, what transformation plans they have, because we want to look at those when we fund them. And then we, over time, monitor that to see that have they met those, because depending on how transformed the company is, or in terms of what their plan is, that has an impact in terms of the, I would call it, discounting codes that we give when we price them for the facility. So we look at those. But for the banks, that's outside of our jurisdiction, but that has been raised, and it's something that I think the banks are engaging with. But that has been raised, but we don't have jurisdiction. The points, Chair, that you mentioned on my concluding remarks, we're saying when we, the first one, when we say when we looked at 6 billion, we took a view to say this economic crisis will go for about, at least in our minds, about 18 months. That's when we started looking at this. But we're saying it might just well be longer than that. And it might just mean then we have to reflect to say the 6 billion that we've put in, is that sufficient, looking at what is happening. But we're saying whilst we intervene, I think we need to be we need to realize that if we ourselves are not sustainable, that means then we won't be able to put in money into the economy. So it's that balancing act. But if we look at the reduced as our assets have been, we still have the capability to can still do more. So, but what we're saying, we will have to do it sensibly. We have to look at what the need is, and then we say, do we need to increase it over time, or what should we do? I think that's the point that we're saying. We have to continually, in fact, what we do every quarter, we do scenario testing to say, what does it mean for this? Because now it's not only the new capital, the 6 billion, that is going into the economy, which is the new one that we've earmarked, but is the sources of income that comes from our existing one, which has been reduced, because some of them, we've restructured their loans, so we're not paying them. The interest that we'd ordinarily have received, we're not getting that. The dividends that we'd ordinarily have received, we're not getting those. So we have to factor all of that into account, because if you're not getting all of those, and we're not, and we're putting in money which is going to be repaid over a longer time, that has an impact on the sustainability of IDC. So we continually have to look at that. That's what that point is really trying to say, that chair. The other point is on the human resources. Because we've seen a growth, it is something that we have to continually keep watch on. So it might well happen that we will increase our human resources so that we can be able to respond. But also we move people around to where there's a greater need. I think that's the point I've made. So it's something that has an impact on your turnaround, particularly when you bring in new people. So I'm just flagging this to the committee to say, as much as we will, because it's important that we respond quickly. You don't want to come up with a perfect prescription for a client that's in the morgue. I think it defeats the objective. So, but we're flagging that to say, as there's pressure on the human resource capacity, we will do more, but that might have an impact on the turnaround. But it's something that we have to be sensitive of when we highlight. I'm just flagging it to the committee to say, we will continue to do that. But I mean, if we have, presently IDC has got about 657 odd people, including me, I think. So we
might just be that we have to increase our capacity. I think there's a point you made on the mission.
It's related. That's why I wanted to ask a follow-up. Should we be worried?
Yes. At this stage...
Should we be worried, Mr. Kuna?
Well, Chair, if the crisis lasts for 3 years, we should be very worried. We should be very worried.
You spoke of 18 months.
Yes, madam.
18 months plus, and you still have this. And that's why I'm asking whether we should be worried. And looking at your mission statement also, it says something to me, because these are things that are related in as far as I'm concerned. I don't know, do you want to come back to us? Or are you going to respond now in terms of that? I think you must come back to us.
Chair, with your permission, can I respond? If the committee is not satisfied, then maybe we can come back. At this stage, in terms of what we said we will do, I don't think the committee should be worried. What I've highlighted to the committee that the income will reduce if you compare it to the previous period. But that will not, at least in our minds, result in our sustainability being jeopardized. I think at this stage, that's what I'm saying, if that's why we... on a quarterly basis, do stress testing. So I don't think the committee should be worried. I think we can respond. The 6 billion, if it's taken all of it in this period, together with the clients that are in distress, I don't think the committee should be worried. I think the IDC will be able to respond to this crisis as we have it. But obviously, if the need is much more than what we have now, I think we will assess it. But I think if we see warning signs, I mean, I think we will... would have noted the minister even earlier than anybody else. But at this stage, I'm not worried. I don't think the committee should at all be worried. I think we can be able to respond within the limitations that we've put in. Then there's a question which you said we've got Africa before.
Can I follow it up? You worry me even more, Mr. Kuna. You see, because you're talking income, and income is supposed to... You're saying you are a self-financing institution. You are worried about your future income because of the challenges that we are facing currently. Because if people are not able to repay, then of course your income is going to be affected. And obviously that will affect your response, even... You won't perhaps be able to pay for certain operational matters within the ITC. So what I'm saying, that's what I'm saying, maybe you should go back and look into this thing. Because I know that we're just putting these questions to you. You need to go back and relook at it, and then perhaps come back to us with a promise, that would make us get settled in as far as that is concerned. It is not something that you should take it as your own baby, because we are all into this and we want to see this succeeding. And it is important that every partner, we are moving away from working in silos, because it's the country's challenge, and the country has to look at all sides, whether we will be in a position to do it or not. It's not about, for us, if IDC is sustainable, then the better. So we want to assist as much as possible. And I must indicate to you that the Minister of Economic Development is actually looking up to you in terms of creating more jobs, because we promised that we're going to make sure that we save the jobs that are there. So for us to be sure of that, then we need to hear IDC, because you represent the major part of that response plan, framework. Can we agree on that the IDC will go back and look at these areas that have a potential of really making us not to have a potential of making us to worry more, actually, than we were worried. I thought I was wrapping up because I'm looking at time, it's 10 to 12, but I'll give member Ngonyama, member Zodezi, the opportunity to
Madam Chair, I wanted to just to suggest that it does appear that in terms of the figures and the areas, we had actually, we even went beyond. I think you were right now. And can we then agree that in the next one, let's get the overall, if it's possible, because that will actually make us now understand this within that context.
Thank you. Ma'am, for this.
Thank you, Chair. About the 23 agencies in rural areas, in the next engagement that we are talking about, can we get the specifics as to the actual location of the project in the particular province and the contact number so that we can do oversight where possible? Yes. And again, on page 18, about the 8 applications that have been rejected, one doesn't have an idea as to whether you identify the witnesses in the application and advise the person or the company accordingly to say improve on these areas and also provide a mentor for the person to be given, you know, some time to say within 3 or 6 months come back and we think the application could be approved, but not just reject. Okay.
Thanks, Member Sotis. And I think perhaps the CEDA, they're supposed to be doing that coaching, mentoring, and also training. And that's your your baby, actually. That's it. So if maybe the impact, if you can assess the impact, especially moreover that you've requested that they be replicated into deep rural areas, and if they are able then to assist then for the better. Can we get that through our secretary? Maybe, Ariko, you should just jot down all the issues that need to be forwarded to us from the IT system so that we can then distribute to all members and see whether we can make follow-ups into those areas where you say you've been responding to. Thank you. You want to come in before we close?
Please. Thanks, Chair. I think the suggestion by Mr. Ngonyama would assist. I think when we give the committee the total picture, because I think it will hopefully demonstrate to the committee that at this stage the committee should not be worried about the IDC. I think the committee, I don't want to leave here and the committee spend sleepless. The committee should not be worried. In terms of the commitment we have, we are able to respond, we will respond. But the total picture will give a good sense of that. As I said, we probably narrowed it too much. I think it's a fault on our side, particularly because it's the first engagement. But we've noted all the other points that have been made. Chair, we will, through your office, provide that information and it will give a sense. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Sekrina. As long as we haven't responded and we're not sure, we are going to be worried. It's not your, don't take it personal. It's not your problem that much. We just want to see whether your share in terms of our response will help us. But at the end of the day, we are all, like I said, we are all in it. And we'll make sure that we survive it. So be as objective and as transparent as possible so that we can be able to assist. Okay. Otherwise, let's thank you very much. We know we have actually informed you, gave you a very short notice. And by the mere fact that you were able to cancel some of your prior, you know, commitments to be here with us, we appreciate it. And I hope that you do understand that this is because of the nature of this framework. It needs us to be on our toes, and we are going to make it possible that whoever is responsible for making it happen does account to us, and so that we can, you know, by the end of the year, at least before the adjustments, we are able to see whether really we are going forward or backward. And if you feel we are thinking a bit in terms of money, tell us, because maybe we might be able to assist you. You don't know. So this is intended for the good. Otherwise, thank you very much for availing yourself. All the members of the IDC, and good luck in your work. We know this is not an easy task, but we are there with you. Thank you very much. We will convene another meeting where you'll be briefing us more, giving us more details. Thank you very much. Members must remain. Thank you.